You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, welcome to Built for the Stage podcast. This is Joe Roscoe, founder of Built for the Stage, Broadway's number one fitness platform. If you want to try a free trial, go to the website builtforthestage.com or click the link in the description of this episode, and you can work for 7 days with your own Broadway fitness coach on an online app. So check it out. No catch, no gimmicks. BuiltForTheStage.com. If you like Built for the Stage podcast, please rate, subscribe, and leave a comment. It'd be greatly appreciated. All right, please enjoy this conversation. Okay, Sharon, thanks for joining us. I'm going to take a crack at your last name. So you folks listening, you can check out our website and you can see how it's written out. So I'm going to guess Saeh.
Oh, close. Oh, but no cigar. Okay. So Saeg. It's like
a, oh, that's not close at all. That was awful.
It's like Saeg with a like a hard G. So like Saeg.
Saeg.
Yeah.
So much easier than I was trying
then
to
make it looks. I know there's like a lot of extra letters.
Yeah. Okay, so you got, for those of you listening, it's Sharon, S H A R O N E S A Y E G H. Okay, you can check out her website, SharonSaeg.com. All right, cool. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for that workout we just had.
Of course, thank you. It was awesome.
Sharon just came in here and crushed a little workout with me. So we were just chatting that you went to school in Syracuse at, is it Syracuse University or University of Syracuse?
Syracuse University.
I want to get it right. The Orange.
The Orange.
Formerly known as the Orange Men.
Yes.
But now it's the Orange.
The Orange. They wanted to be more inclusive, which I appreciate.
I appreciate that, you know? Others might not appreciate that now they're a fruit only.
Well, but they were always a fruit.
That's true. That's true. Maybe they could just be a color as well. You know, if no one ever saw the orange, they could assume you're just a color.
Yeah. We are all the orange.
So you went to school for theater or acting? Okay. Yeah. At Syracuse. When did you like decide that that's what you were going to do, that you wanted to go into performing for a living?
I think like in high school, probably like my sophomore year, I told my parents I wanted to study theater in college, and they were very nervous and worried about that. They were always super supportive, but they were like, it's more of a hobby and you should be a lawyer or a doctor, you know, which is more stable. Mm-hmm. And then at first they were like, okay, I grew up in California. They're like, you can't go to school outside California. And at the time...
Wow, you hopped up. You went from one pond to the other.
I did.
Okay.
At the time, there were actually no schools in California that gave you... that like offered a BFA in musical theater. There was like a BFA in just straight theater and acting, but no musical theater. So I actually, this is kind of showing my age, but I like sent a VHS audition tape.
Oh, dang.
To a bunch of schools. Cool. Yeah, because that was like pre, you know. And I mailed mine into Syracuse, and then I got into a couple East Coast schools, told my parents, and they were like, oh man, all right, let's go visit the ones you got into and make a decision.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's how I ended up at Syracuse.
That's cool. I never had to make a VHS for my auditions. I had to make them for like some colleges that I wanted to play sports at, the VHS.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just had to show up on site for those auditions. So,
yeah.
Hey, me too. I was rocking that VHS as well. Are we millennials? I never get it right.
I think I am technically a millennial, but I definitely feel older than what you consider to be a millennial.
All you real millennials out there, just shut up, okay, with your, DVDs are old too. What's the new thing?
I know. CDs aren't even a thing.
No, they're
gone.
It's
just MP3s now. It's crazy.
We have our car here in New York. We're blessed to have a car. Thankfully, we have anything. But it's a CD player. It's not like a Bluetooth whatever. Yeah. And I feel so old with the CD player going in there. But okay, so your parents were like, are you sure you want to do that? How was that growing up? Like, were your parents into theater and the arts, or were they just kind of more of your, I don't want to say average person, but, you know, not your arts type person?
Yeah, I mean, they're not in the arts. They're in real estate, which is very different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were always supportive. Like, they loved the fact that I sang and, like, did the musicals at school and stuff, but they just thought it was more just like something nice to do after school. And mm-hmm. I grew up in LA, and in high school I wanted to like start auditioning for like professional things because mm-hmm. I was in LA.
Yeah.
And my parents were very much against that, and they wanted me to have like a quote unquote normal childhood. At the time I was really frustrated, but I'm actually now looking back on it happy that they didn't let me audition for anything professional. And that I saved that for basically after college.
Yeah.
And then I remember, like, after I graduated Syracuse and I moved to New York and I started auditioning and stuff, you know, it's like, it's really hard. You audition is like a lot and you're usually non-equity. You don't get seen a lot. And mm-hmm. it was like, you know, I want to say like a year and a half of me into me, like being here and auditioning. My parents were like, okay, like how much longer are you going to do this? You know, mm-hmm. like we don't really know how it works, but you know, we don't know how much longer, like, maybe give yourself, like, to 2 years, and then if it's not working out, then try to find something else. And I was like, no, no, no. And then, like, luckily, I got Mamma Mia, like, right before the two-year mark, and I was like, ha-ha. And then awesome. They were, yeah.
Okay, cool. You weren't committing or booking any shows before that?
I did. It was just, like, small things here and there. Like, I did a workshop of a great play. I did, like, some small shows, but nothing that, like, could, like, really sustain me financially or, like, career-wise, you
know? Yeah, that was my next question on... So when did you want to perform? But then my next question was, when did you think yourself that you didn't want to perform? Did you have that thought when your parents were like, hey, maybe you might want to start thinking about your exit strategy? Were you ever thinking that? Or were you like, no way?
No. I was like, I got to prove it to them. I got to like make it happen. I mean, I was like also so young and just like dreaming big and just like, mm-hmm. just like, I was like, I know it's going to happen. I just have to like make it happen somehow, you know?
How do you hold on to that mentality now?
That's a great question. I definitely think like my goals and stuff have changed, obviously being here for a while. And I've learned a lot of things about the business, which are, some of them are exciting. Some of them are a little bit like have taken the magic out of the business for me, you know, because it's just a little bit more looking at the business more realistically. Mm-hmm. But you know, the thing that connects me back to that like big dreaming hope is actually like seeing kids at the stage door, or like getting messages on like Instagram or Facebook of kids being in high school or whatever, like seeing a show I'm in and telling me like how inspired they are. Like that always brings me back to like when I felt like that, you know,
yeah.
just really, really wonderful and humbling and mm-hmm. inspiring actually.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And fitness, like so many times when you're first starting out, you want to get this six pack or you want to get this strong or this fast or whatever. And then once you're in the midst of it, yeah, it's the same thing where it starts to fade on you real quick. You either mm-hmm. achieved it or you're struggling in the midst of it and you start to lose the fire.
Yeah.
We have New Year's coming up. We were kind of talking about yeah. that. And then the fitness fire will begin. So that's cool that you've been able to keep in touch with like the appreciation of how you're impacting younger people mm-hmm. or the fans that are being changed by your performance. So I could definitely see how you can kind of hang on to that passion for just the grind of being an artist. So cool. So you're in the band's visit right now.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it. It was on Thursday night. It was awesome.
All right. Thank you.
I have all kinds of things to say about it, but the podcast is about you, so let's keep it that way. if you haven't seen it yet, there's a reason it's won a bunch of awards. So if you're in the New York area, definitely go check out the band's visit. We'll talk about it right now. So when you saw this listing, I don't know if you saw it or your agent or whatever, that it was going to be this show called The Band's Visit, and you saw the description of it, and you're of a Middle Eastern descent, were you like, this is mine? Like,
yes.
This, no one in this city is yeah. going to get this role but me. Like,
yes.
I'm in this show.
Yeah, I saw the breakdown, and I, like, emailed my agent. I was like, I must be in this show. It's like an Israeli musical. I'm Israeli. And like, and I already like recognized the title, The Band's Visit, because it's based on a movie called The Band's Visit that came out of Israel. So I had already seen the movie too. So I was like, I have to be in this show. So luckily they got me an audition. And in my first audition, they said you could sing whatever you want. And I was like, okay, great. I'm going to sing a song in Hebrew because they like need to know that I speak Hebrew and I'm Israeli. And you know what I mean? So yeah, I was just like going forward hard.
Yeah, you have tons of like dialects on your resume that you're able to do, right?
Yeah.
So I knew that when you saw that, you know, it's one thing to, it's always common for us as actors to study or pick up on certain dialects, but like it's a whole other thing when it's like actually your life or like mm-hmm. a part of your heritage or roots. So that's cool. Yeah, that was like one of my immediate thoughts was like, you know, you always have those moments of when you see a show and you're like, this is the one.
Yeah.
So good for you for that happening and you, you know, following through and
thanks.
And booking it.
I feel very lucky.
Yeah, that's great. So, before speaking of auditions, you know, and you went in and sang that song in Hebrew, what kind of mentality do you have or like rituals, or pregame, whatever, before you step into an audition room, what do you like to do before going in? Anything in detail?
I mean, aside from obviously preparing whatever material you've been given, I've learned actually lately that I've just kind of like got to like tell myself, I've got to like psych myself up in my brain before I go in. And then just like let everything go once I'm in the room. Like, for example, if it's something that I'm nervous about singing or something, before I go into the room, I just like literally in my mind tell myself, like, you're an incredible singer. You know, just like, you are an amazing actor, whatever it is. And it's just to honestly like help me keep that confidence. Because like if I don't believe I'm an incredible actor or an incredible singer, incredible performer, like why is the team behind the table going to think that, you know? And then once I go in, I try to just like let go of everything and just like play around and just, you know, be in the moment and do the thing, you know?
Yeah. Positive self-talk.
Yeah. It's like cheesy, but it works.
it might come across cheesy or nowadays it's like just one of those like common, maybe overly used phrases, but it has come to the revelation of so many people that it's important. Like what you say to yourself a lot of the times determines an outcome of what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And so oftentimes, you know, we can be negative on ourselves in the business. You know, you haven't booked something for a while or this person just went in and you heard them do this or that. And you're like, oh, they were really good. I don't think I can match that. Same thing in fitness. You know, you see the Instagram people and you're like, oh, I just don't have, you know, the genetics or they've been doing that since they were kids. Mm-hmm. It's just not for me. Like I'm fat. I'll always be fat. and that's, you know, you hear that a lot. So yeah, the positive self-talk. Awesome.
Yeah.
And then just letting it wing, just winging it, huh? Just get in there and just let it, or well, I should like say, I just let prepare. It loose. No,
yeah.
Not wing it. I should say, just let it rip. Just let it loose.
Yeah.
That's cool. So just like having the confidence to tell yourself that you're capable and then just knowing it when you're in there. So.
Yeah. And I think I also used to think like, oh, I have to get the scene right or like the song right, like quote unquote right rather than wrong. Like I need to play this character right or correctly. And I think I've learned that there's no such thing. Everything is very subjective, right? I mean, aside from like singing the correct notes or whatever. Mm-hmm. And like the audition is just truly an opportunity to show like your take on this character. So even if it's like totally not vibing, like your take is not vibing with what the director wants, that's totally fine. This is who I am. This is how I would do it. You know? So like, I just try to bring myself, whatever that is, rather than trying to be what I think this character is supposed to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah. 100%. Sometimes, like you said, it doesn't work out. Sometimes you go in and they think it's something, but you bring something else and you change their mind.
Right,
so that's
right.
always cool and it happens too. Awesome. I'm excited for people to hear this. This is really good stuff. So when you were with the band's visit off-Broadway mm-hmm. at the Atlantic Theater and now at the Barrymore, how did the show change? How did it grow and transform in this journey? So yeah, just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so off-Broadway, we were in a much smaller theater. It sat like 199 seats. And on Broadway, it's a much bigger theater. It has like almost 1,100 seats. So the stage is a little bit bigger. So they basically built a bit bigger of a set. And so there's more playing space. So a lot of the like transitions and the movement in the show actually changed the most, I would say. Mm-hmm. They also incorporated the band onto the stage and throughout the transitions more, just because they had more space now. Mm-hmm. And then they also added one more band member that we didn't have downtown, that guy, Osama, who plays the Del Buca, which is that like amazing Middle Eastern drum.
Yeah.
We didn't have the one
he sits on or stands with.
Yeah, the one he stands with.
He's incredible, right?
Yeah,
he was my favorite out of the instrumentalists up there.
He's amazing.
I just saw a kid at my church, and he plays the drums, and he's not into theater really at all. And I was like, you got to see this show.
Yeah.
There's this guy doing this percussion, and he's just amazing. So,
yeah.
How did they choose the... Because there are some people in the pit.
Right.
So how did they, like, make the cut or not make the cut to be up on the stage?
So, no, there's four people in the pit, but those people are all playing instruments that, like, can't be moved.
Like a piano or
something. There's, like, two pianos, a big, like, drum set that obviously you can't move.
Yeah.
And then, like, a huge upright bass.
Got it.
But everyone else... They, like, play a song on stage, and then they run down to the pit. They play a song, and then they run back.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Going back and forth.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I thought maybe they played from off stage with a mic. Okay, so they're going under and up and under.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Crazy.
That's cool. That's cool. That'd be, like, something interesting to see, like, behind the scenes, like, seeing that transition. Okay. So no jadedness from the piano players or the drummers.
No.
They did not make the cut to be up on the stage.
No.
Okay. So a lot of like scenic things that were different, you're saying, just basically capabilities of what you can do in the smaller theater in comparison to the one on Broadway.
Yeah. And then also just like the movement of like, there's not like a lot of traditional quote unquote dance, but there's a lot of movement, like stylized movement.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all, like, really fleshed out more on Broadway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How was it working with David Yazbek? Did you get to...
Oh, he's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's our composer.
Mm-hmm.
He's an awesome guy. He's super funny, super silly. He's always cracking jokes.
Okay.
And he's said in interviews and stuff before that he, like, has truly loved working on this piece because his dad is Lebanese. And so he grew up with some of this, like, Arabic music in the home. And he like, you know, really dived back into that to write this score. And he feels like he kind of, like, returned to his roots.
Yeah.
And, like, I would see him with, like, the musicians and the music director, like, really collaborating and coming up with the transitional music that now exists in the show. And they really, like, really organically, like, all came up with it together. It was so cool to watch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Just kind of like a living room sesh where they're just kind of like banging out some stuff and whatever fit and whatever didn't.
Yeah, and like we would take breaks, like, you know, you're required to take like a 10-minute break, right? We would take breaks and then like the actor musicians or whatever in our show would just start jamming and just like we would all just like sit and listen and they'd be like, oh, maybe we'll put this in the show like that you just came up with, you know? So it was so cool. It was unlike any other rehearsal process I've been a part of.
Cool.
Yeah.
What is the message that the band's visit conveys to the audience?
What do you think it is?
No, this is about you. I have my opinions. we're going back and forth this right now because if you were to see it, it's not very forceful.
Right.
It's very up for interpretation. So I wanted to hear from you what you thought.
Yeah. So our team never said like this is the message we're trying to get across. Like they never said one like blanket statement or something. It's kind of like you said, up for interpretation. What I hope people take from it is that they realize that everyone in this world is a lot more similar than we are different. We love to like point out each other's differences and we love to like categorize people, just people in general, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think when it comes down to it, we are all the same and we all need the same things. We all want love. We all have hope. We all need clothing and shelter and food. We all are truly the same, you know? And then also, kind of in a timely, this is a very timely thing, but, you know, this place takes place in the Middle East, which I think in the U.S. people view as like a very fraught political climate. And not to say that it isn't, it is, but that's not the only thing that's like, that exists in the Middle East. And I think the people of the countries in Israel and all around the Middle East don't necessarily feel like represented by that political narrative that we really just see here. And just like I think people in this country, like our country is very divided right now politically, and I think people don't really feel defined by the government, right? Or the actions of the government. They may or they may not. But I think in general, what I'd like to say to people with our show is like, we as people are not defined by the actions or the policies or the views of our governments, right? Like just because two countries could be at war, it doesn't mean the people of those countries hate each other or the people of those countries are at war and, you know, wouldn't help each other out or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that's really beautiful, and I love that we're like showing people from Israel and Egypt and just places in the Middle East as just human beings and three-dimensional human beings rather than like stereotypes of the region, you know?
Right. Yeah, it really was, just because it is a 24-hour period really that you guys go through, and everyone has their stuff pretty much is kind of what I'm taking from it. Everyone has their stuff. Everyone has love. Everyone has turmoil, loss, struggles.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. With such a simple story, kind of probably just adding to what we just talked about, but the story is simple.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes the show to you so special? What is special about it with such a show that's so simple? Might have been what we just talked about there, but...
Yeah. I think one thing our director said once was like, you know, a lot of times you see a show or a movie and like this huge life event happens and then the character has changed forever and all these things, right? Which sometimes does happen in real life, but a lot of times in real life I think something very small might happen that will actually change your life, right? And I think this piece kind of shows these like mundane things that could all happen in a 24-hour period, and nothing is like what you think of as like a life-changing event, but these very small things all add up to become a life-changing event. So it's kind of like challenged me in my own life to look at things that happen in my own life, whether or not they're, even if they're small things, to be like, this could be something that really could impact my life in an amazing way, in a terrible way. You know what I mean? It doesn't have to be like this huge, huge life event. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I had no intention to talk about this, but I was just recalling like a childhood memory, and it was of no real like substance or importance at the time. But it stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 10-second moment. And now it does affect my way of thinking or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so true, like what you're talking about with the show. Because when I left the show, I was perplexed at first. Because I was like, they didn't really dive into too many, you know, deep plots of... Because there's subplots.
Yeah.
You know, there's subplots. So I was waiting to get pretty in-depth in one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of just touch the... I think there's three, maybe. There's the one apartment, the other apartment, the skating...
And then the kids. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the kids' apartment, then the one with the conductor, that apartment.
Yeah.
And then the skating rink, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. So I'm leaving, I was like, what was, like, the main, you know, what was the plot of, like, the tension or the thing that had to be overcome? What was it? Because it's not the... I don't know, someone needs to be rescued or someone goes from poor to rich or someone whatever.
Right.
But as you go to think about it, it was really just the people coexisting as humans and the subtleties of how relationships are created and impactful in your life. So.
And like you said, like all these little things that happened weren't crazy huge moments, but these characters really are changed probably for the rest of their lives because of what happened in this 24-hour period, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool and very brave of creators of shows to do that.
Yeah.
Especially nowadays where, you know, I love a lot of the stuff out there, but a lot of it is like slam, bam, like lights and
totally
big this and, you know, all that stuff. So I really appreciated it for that. All right, so off the story's plot, I felt like there was an essence of, like, finding truth in the midst of being lost. They were physically lost.
Right.
So physically they were lost, but somehow being lost helped them to find some truths.
Yeah.
Can you recall, of like, a time in your career where you felt like, you know, you were lost or at a low point, but then somehow in the midst of it you found hope or peace or motivation? Maybe by a situation or a person that kind of came up in the midst of that struggle.
Yeah, actually, okay, like one of the first things I did here when I first moved here, I did this workshop of a new play called Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo. And it was this beautiful play and I loved it. I did like a 6-week workshop of it and then found out that it was going to go to like Center Theater Group in LA and then transfer to Broadway, right? And I was like, oh my God, this is it. Like, this is going to be my Broadway debut. Holy moly. Like, this is amazing, right? And from the time the workshop started to the to the run in LA, they changed directors, which happens a lot. And the new director, you know, wanted to bring his own people on. So I didn't move forward with the piece. And at the time I was like crushed, devastated. You know, I was just like so sure that this was my thing. And like, I was so bummed. And then right when that show was opening on Broadway, I got the call and I found out that I was going to make my Broadway debut in Mamma Mia. And I kind of had this like moment where I was like, oh, like even if I had gotten Bengal Tiger, I wouldn't have been able to do both, right? I would have had to choose. And nowadays, I always think like when I don't get something that I really want or I think I really want or whatever, I always like, even if I am bummed, because that's totally valid and you have to like go there, I always think like, okay, well, I'm not supposed to get this for whatever reason, and I probably won't know why for a while, but in a year or two, I'll know why. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that's easier said than done, but I really do believe, like, if you booked everything you auditioned for, you literally wouldn't be able to do every show. Like, they would all conflict, you know? So you can't get everything you auditioned for, so you just have to, like, let it go and just trust that the ones you're supposed to get, you will, and the ones you're not, you won't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it'd be pretty scary or pretty boring of a life if we got everything we wanted, if everyone was always happy, if everything was easy, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's just not realistic.
Right.
But yet, we give ourselves those unrealistic expectations sometimes.
Right.
Cool. So what do you do for fitness? We kind of chatted a little bit about what you do a couple times a week and whatnot. So go ahead and just chat about that. And you had said maybe you wanted to talk about something, you know, fitness related that was on your mind. Yeah.
So nowadays I mostly do a lot of hot vinyasa yoga, just to like keep everything strong. And it's like a good workout for me in between shows because it's not like too exhausting, but it's a good workout. And I like just keep everything strong, I guess, you know, I'm one of those people that's like naturally flexible, but not naturally strong. So I can get injured easily because I can like overextend myself, you know? And yeah, what I wanted to say was when I did Mamma Mia on Broadway, it was the stage was raked, which means it's on an angle. And even if it wasn't raked, I didn't realize like how not strong I was, like to the core, not like, oh, I can't lift this thing, but just like truly strong. And I, you know, I worked out, but not so much. I didn't think I really needed to work out so much because I was like, I'm happy with my body. I'm good. I'm in a good place. But I didn't realize that I truly needed to work out to like maintain my health, because I did the show for like 3.5-4 years. And it's like, it's grueling on your body to do 8 shows a week, the same repetition over and over. And, you know, like I started to feel like pain in my shoulder, pain in my knees, pain in my back. And I was like so young. And I'm like, I'm way too young to be having this much pain and discomfort. And I just didn't have like the strength, honestly, to like sustain 8 shows a week. And so I had to like take a 3-month absence after a while because like my back was really a mess. And now I like, if I know I'm going into 8 shows a week, like I have to at least maintain like 2x a week yoga, just to, like keep everything strong, because I don't want to like, I want to prevent injury. I don't want to be in pain basically, you know, yeah. But I didn't realize that like, I felt like, oh, just work out so that you like look amazing. It's not only about that, you know?
Yeah. I covered that in another episode you guys could check out with JC Schuster. And we were talking about the misconception of to work out or to be fit is to have abs or to look a certain way. And that's the struggle with either a naturally heavy set person or a naturally lean person, is that the lean person's like, I look fine. Like, why do I need to work out? I don't need to work out. And they don't think about just health in general, like the upkeep of the body and being, you know, able and with the ability to sustain an 8 show week per se.
Right.
And then the heavy set person is just like, either this is my type, you know, this is why I get cast, or, you know, like we talked about earlier, it's just not in the cards for me as far as looking a certain way. But they just aren't considering like, hey, like this is just about your life, about your ability to either be able to do something or not be able to do something, whether that's on a stage or just like, you know, God willing, at 50 or 60 years old, you can sit and pick up things and put them over your head, that type of deal. So yeah, that is important, just the upkeep of the body and fitness. You skate in the show now.
Yes, I roller skate.
Did you learn how to skate for the show, or you already knew how to skate?
So I full on lied in my audition.
Okay.
Because, okay, so the band's visit is based on a movie, and in the movie there is a roller skating scene, which is super short. And there wasn't a dance audition for this show because there's not really a lot of traditional Broadway dancing in it. So in the audition, after I sang and I did the scenes and everything, they were like, oh, by the way, do you roller skate? And I was like, yeah, because I thought, oh, I'll just have to, like, be in skates on stage, which I'll be totally fine with. I've been to, like, a roller skating birthday party. Like, I'm fine, you know? Mm-hmm. So I could skate a little bit, but I've never, like, full-on skated professionally or anything.
Yeah.
And then the first day of rehearsal, the guy that I skate with, my partner in the show, his father... Like, he grew up with his father as a hockey coach, so he's, like, very comfortable on ice skates, so mm-hmm. he was really comfortable on the roller skates. Mm-hmm. So he was, like, skating around doing all these fancy things.
He had the longer hair in the show, right?
Yeah. And then our choreographer was like, great, can you do this? Can you do this? And I was like, whoa, nobody told me it was going to be this crazy.
Was it Xanadu? Is that the skating show?
Xanadu? Oh, that is it. Yeah.
He's pulling a Xanadu on you.
Oh, my God.
I want you to do
so then
that.
I was like, can you bring someone to just, like, teach me the basics? Which is actually a really important lesson I've learned now, like, ask for what you need, right? Because I think, like, Sharon 5-6 years ago would have been like, I'll figure it out, whatever you want, you know? Yeah. And then maybe I would have injured myself. Sure. But I was like, hey, can you just bring someone in? Because the choreographer wasn't on skates, you know, and she was just choreographing things. Mm-hmm. So they were like, totally. So they brought in this one guy who actually did Xanadu.
Okay.
Yeah. And he was also in SpongeBob. His name was Curtis.
Okay.
And he was, I think, skating or maybe rollerblading in SpongeBob at the time.
Probably either rollerblading or skateboarding.
Yeah. So they brought him just for a day, and he just taught us the basics, like, you know, knees always bent, weight always forward, butt out, you know, mm-hmm. which was super helpful. Mm-hmm. And now I really have a lot of fun. At first, it was a little terrifying, but now it's really fun. Yeah.
In those first, stages of rehearsal, or maybe when you were at the Atlantic, did you ever have any, like, close calls of either falling or rolling off the stage or anything like that?
Oh, God. Luckily, not rolling off the stage. At the Atlantic, I didn't have any big snafus. And actually, Bill, my partner, used to lift me on skates, like, while we're both skating. And somehow we were fine. We've been running now on Broadway, like, a year and a half. And I have fallen once. But it was kind of a half fall. Mm-hmm. And I give Bill crap about it because... So I do this arabesque on skates, which for people who don't know, it's like basically one leg is up in the air and one leg is still skating and I'm holding my partner's hands. So sometimes I like wobble a little as I'm getting into it, but I always, you know, like find my balance and I'm fine. And we're skating one day and I'm wobbling a little, but I just think to myself, like, it'll be fine. I'll get there. And I just didn't. So I like started to fall a little, like, you know, and Bill could see that I was falling. So he tried to like lift my arms up to help me, mm-hmm. but I was really truly just falling, but he never let go of my hands. So he actually wound up just like dragging me for a little bit, which was like on one hand good, but on the other hand so obvious.
Yeah.
But you know, we like laughed it off and I said something in Hebrew, and I think I had some friends in the audience that day actually, and they thought it was on purpose. They thought it was supposed to happen because these kids are like in a roller rink, like they're not supposed 100%. To be professional. You
know that I've fallen plenty of times in a roller skating rink for sure.
So it has happened once, and hopefully knock on wood it won't happen again, but it's all good.
After this, I'll show you some single leg Romanian deadlifts. It'll help you with that support and balance.
Okay.
All right? Little plug there for Built for the Stage.
Amazing.
Lastly, I'll just close out with what are some, I like to ask people, what are some daily practices that you keep to just like move forward in life or to chase goals or just the little subtleties of a daily routine that you feel keeps you on that path?
Yeah. I mean, specifically for our business and the show, I like always vocally warm up because even if I could like get through it, let's say without, it just makes me feel like ready to go. And like, it takes like 10, 15 minutes. It's just not that deep. Like just do it. You know what I mean? And then same thing with the physical warm up before the show, like 10 minutes really. I also keep like a sweater and slippers and like sweatpants backstage because it's always so cold and you like warm up and then you're freezing and then you could injure yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess I just try to like eat well and like plan out my week as to when I'm going to work out or when I'm going to go to yoga so that I don't just like not do it because I haven't planned it. Mm-hmm. And then
that's great. I mean, those are all so simple, but like, it's important, like, because people don't do it. They don't do it. They don't plan.
Yeah, just plan.
And they don't accept the fact that these things don't really take that long.
Like, right.
You said the warm-up was, like, 15 minutes, the physical, same deal. Our workout today was 13 minutes long.
Right.
And you got your bang for your buck, right? Yeah. It was 13 minutes. And
definitely.
And that's what, you know, the excuse of, oh, I just don't have time. I don't have time. But you have time to thumb through on your Instagram, or you have time to blah, blah, blah. So I think that's really important that you have that realization of, hey, it takes this amount of time. I know that it will do a huge dividend on me down the road to just help me periodically. So cool.
Yeah.
Where can we find you on Instagram? We talked about your website in the beginning, but yeah, let us know your Instagram handle, your website, your phone number, address, social security,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, my blood type.
Blood type.
My Instagram handle is just my full name, Sharone Saigh. So it's Sharone Saigh. My website, same, SharoneSaigh.com. Mm-hmm. On Facebook, also Sharone Saigh.
Cool.
Twitter, same thing.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Yeah. Thanks for coming in, Sharone.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
If you haven't seen the band's visit yet, go out and see it. Like I said, the awards were well-deserved. So thanks again, and we'll see you guys next time. Thanks. All right, that's the conclusion of today's podcast with Sharone Saigh. Once again, if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, rate it, comment on it, follow us on Instagram at Built for the Stage. Websites www.builtforthestage.com. Until next time, best wishes on matching your Broadway talent to your new Broadway body. It's me, Roscoe, signing off. Later.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.